Soon as Jeff Jensen comes in, we can start the session. Now, I'd like to ask everyone that's sitting on the left side of the room, I know this is an unusual request, but could you move to the right side of the room? Just, because then it'll look like it's full. Video. It's not that we have cross-eyed panelists. It's that we're trying to create a different image for the last session, and the video camera is on this side of the room. And so...
And I would just have to agree with what Abdul proposed, because we have a steady stream of viewers watching our stream, 60 hours of observation by 63 distinct people around the world. We are not able to get the countries yet, but we're going to share that later with people. Before I start, I just want to make a quick announcement that Ed Remus, Brandon Roberts, Mosi, and Shante all need to stop at the registration desk on the way out, and if you are a cyber navigator, be sure that you have done that. Those four people in particular need to do that before they leave. All right, my name is Kate Williams, as most of you may know, and I'm just going to reiterate my quick vision for eChicago and then turn it over to these four experts. You can see they're experts. They look like experts.
Don't be fooled.
And just a reminder to our experts, they're going to speak into the mic, and if you have something to say, please go to the mic yourself, and you are going to have things to say, because all we're going to do is get started. So this session is about vision, based on what we've learned over the last couple of days and shared with each other. My vision for eChicago, I just want to reiterate, embraces the three values that are in the manifesto on the back page of the program, and we're really pleased that we put it there, because a lot of people have been referring to it. The Cook County CIO mapped his activities into those three values. So I'll just repeat them. Cyber democracy, which means that everyone can make powerful use of information technology. Collective intelligence, meaning that all voices are heard, we pool our intelligence. And information freedom, which means that all this important stuff that we generate, like in the public library, is free. And I want to mention the library because in class this semester, we watched from afar as Britain engaged in a royal battle over its libraries, and what turned out happening was a major struggle that united a lot of people. However, 500 libraries were closed, and it's very sobering because the budget cuts that were put in place in Great Britain dwarf the budget cuts that have been proposed for the United States. So we need each other now more than ever, and eChicago 2012 is going to see that to be even more true. Now, today we have the very best ever panel to lead us in summing up eChicago 2011 and developing a collective vision. For one thing, we have an IT specialist who's been building tech-savvy community institutions in the Puerto Rican community for many years, centered out of Paseo Boricua. We have a woman who has been a social worker working with battered women, but then training other social workers here in Chicago at Circle Campus, also known as UIC. We have an African American studies professor who was also the former mayor of Harvey, Illinois for more than a decade. And we have an old money, North Shore, consummate insider. Insider to the political process in Chicago, statewide, but also in Washington, D.C. And he is going to provide us with the concluding remarks before we open up to you. Now, those short bios are the Twitter version of what you can find in our program. And I have to mention Twitter because Twitter has been a wonderful discovery. First time eChicago has been on Twitter this year. So my question to you all, in the order that I just named you, based on what you've seen here, what is your vision of Chicago as eChicago? And the bonus question is, how do we get there? What we're hoping for is 5 minutes or so from each of you, 5 or 10 minutes from each of you, and then we'll open it up to the crowd here. So Alejandro, please get us started.
Testing, everybody hear me? First of all, I want to thank Drs. Kate Williams and Mike for the invitation. Second, I want to repudiate what they said. I'm not an expert. However, I do have a lot of experience, as probably most of you do, in trying to do something with technology in my community. A caveat, I am on the board of several organizations, most notably the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, which is a 36-year-old organization in Chicago's Humboldt Park, and the board of directors for Youth Connection Charter School, which is a citywide charter composed of 22 campuses that were evolved from alternative schools that come out of the 70s and 80s. We have about 3,000 students across those campuses, and 97% of our population are dropouts or pushouts. Having said that, I do think that it's important that we confront the challenges that both the broadband project and technology in general, at least from my perspective as a community organizer and activist, present. I would lay them out in a series of bullets and ask everyone, panelists and the audience, to respond to them during the question and answer. I think that it's of the utmost importance to develop a parallel technology, a culture of technology, in our communities. And culture is a funny word, but by that I mean there has to be a mentoring of what the possible uses are of technology for our communities across the different strata: healthcare, education, housing, right? And how do we teach and mentor not only organizations and young people, but seniors, right, the disabled? How do we get them to say, okay, how do we contribute to the general project of sustainable community development in a progressive way? I think we have to, at the same time, talk about and build tools to quantify evaluation methodology for broadband projects that include the quality of life and vision components, in addition to what is usually in there, like job search, resume writing, and job posting. I think quality of life in Chicago's neighborhood, a city that builds itself as a city of neighborhoods, right, is extremely important because it gives the community organizations and the communities themselves a chance to develop a collective voice about what they want, not only in their communities, but in the cities. I do think we need to talk about what new applications can be developed at multiple levels, say community, health, business, to take advantage of the big pipe project. That is to say, the development of the broadband project, I believe, changes the paradigm. With so much more information possible, what are we going to use it for in our communities? And that's a whole level of different thinking, okay? Community input and legitimation. How do we gather community organizations and initiatives, including but not limited to the Smart Communities Project, for brainstorming and input on community needs and contributions leading to seats at a governance table for the big project? That is to say, all of the ideas and brainstorming are for naught unless there is a table at which communities can be represented and have their voice around this. Training for business, community-based education, community-based organizations and educational institutions, beginning with a survey of their organizational skills, their outreach and programs to be differentiated, with training on best practices for the different sectors. How do we make use of technology that incorporates the idea of big pipe among the different sectors, among high schools, among city colleges that are based in our communities, around small healthcare clinics, right? around gang intervention projects. And together, executive directors, CEOs, and community leaders begin the dialogue about what a community tech plan looks like. Too many of our community organizations do not have sustainable tech budgets, much less tech plans. Mm. How do we start to talk about 3 to 5 year plans in the community, realizing that money won't fall from the sky, but it's important, perhaps the most important at the beginning, to begin to collaborate and talk about what is possible with what we have. But there's the beginning of the thread of vision. And lastly, to strengthen the existing city-public partnerships and policies by increasing both state, city, and private level of funding, and in particular, I want to reference CAN-TV, who was here during the previous panel. CAN-TV is a much underused tool for the communities. They provide training, they provide the increase of exposure, they can help do outreach if we take advantage of that. I do believe that while the issue of cable web is not the issue we're discussing here, it's the issue of CAN-TV is CAN-TV, we use it as a community partner. I believe those are the kind of practices and that exist now, the partnerships that we need to strengthen so it's not an annual or biannual struggle for funding for these organizations. Thank you.
In terms of how I teach about these ideas is how do we as practitioners, as community people, as residents and citizens in whatever community we claim, how do we help build capacity for people to be agents and actors within their lives, in their communities, to act upon rather than being acted upon themselves. How to be citizens rather than solely clients, which is kind of within social services, I think, quite the balancing act, because very often people come to us as clients and we provide services. How do we transform that so that people start feeling like they can be actors and they can be working within their own communities? So it seems to me that eChicago is a fabulous vehicle. I'm very happy to have learned about this and to be part of this today for multiple ways of thinking about how we can expand the idea of access in order to advocate for people's needs within communities. And I think about that in terms of partnering, in terms of building coalitions, in terms of helping and supporting people to engage in civic life. And we just are at the end of the semester, so of course students are doing presentations, and so I've just had a whole array of advocacy presentations that people had to present to me and the rest of the class. And it's been really interesting to see how much more people are making use of social networks, and so one group created their own Facebook to advocate about a particular issue. Other folks created their own YouTube, you know, kind of presentation, and this is great. I mean, this is what I think continues to build access as well as opportunities for advocating around particular issues. I think the only other thing that I would say is that we are also, I believe, charged with thinking about how to build alliances. Particularly, I know we've heard a lot about the digital divide, which I think is very often mapped onto class as well as race and ethnic differences in terms of who has access to the tools in our toolbox so that we can better connect people with ideas and information, as Fran was talking about in terms of Skokie.net. So I think that's all I have to say for now. Thank you.
I too am happy to be here and want to exercise a disclaimer about expertise. But nonetheless, I'm delighted to be here and want to commend the organizers for this conference. I think it's an idea that time has come. In the introduction, it was noted that I served as the mayor of Harvey from 1983 to 1995. I also served as a columnist for the Southtown Star for about 11 years. The Southtown Star is a subdivision of the Sun-Times News Group. And I mention that because the community that I was the mayor of for 12 years and the surrounding low-income minority communities, Harvey, Phoenix, Dixmoor, Markham, are facing the equivalent of a news desert in that the Southtown Star no longer covers those communities. And those communities are desperate, in need of seeing themselves reflected back to them in a positive way. I should also quickly point out that Harvey was an industrial suburb of Chicago that has been devastated by globalization and deindustrialization here in the United States. At a time when we see consolidation in the media, we see consolidation in the economy, and the solution that many people call for is localism, that developing local institutions. And I think the broadband and superhighway can be a tool for getting at some of those problems. Alejandro talked about some points that he would like for us to respond to. And I'm glad he did, because in my comments, I think we need to focus on how do we dig deeper in terms of reaching out to low-income, what Cook County calls low and moderate income communities, those that I mentioned. And I think there's a way to do that, and I was happy to learn that the COO of Cook County was here, because Cook County has a thing called block grants, community development block grants, for building infrastructure. And the broadband is an infrastructure that Cook County can assist in bringing the expertise that is available at a conference such as this into those very communities. So I would like to see a smaller version of this conference hosted in the South Suburbs. And I know Abdul has plans to do Cook County. This is a focus on Chicago. And I'm in Chicago quite a bit, and I view myself as an advocate for the South Suburbs to help offset what I call big city chauvinism. Thirdly, I think a directory of parties that participate in a conference such as this would be useful to those of us who want to build upon and replicate the practice and of of groups like the Skokie Library, like WRTE. Those are shining examples of what we can do. It was pointed out that there is an opportunity opening up for low-power FM stations, and we need to be poised and ready to take advantage of that and to build, literally build, a network of community-based low-powered FM stations from the west side through the south side into the south suburbs and all the way down to Champaign-Urbana, that we have an opportunity to build a future if we're ready to take advantage of those opportunities. I think what we're faced with is a problem of communication that low and moderate income communities can control and that can serve their interests. How do we coordinate that communication and the expertise so that that expertise is shared amongst these communities and institutions, and so that we build toward a scale of operation that has impact, that it's nice to do things in a nice small scale, but we need to figure out a way to communicate, coordinate, develop a scale, and act jointly around making democracy real, particularly for the people who are low and moderate income. And I'll stop here.
Well, on the day before Easter, you guys are the hardy few. Hanging in there on a Saturday afternoon, both here and the virtual audience, whoever's out there, this is great. Kate, this is my fifth eChicago, and I think I've been in the wrap-up panel every single one of these conferences as a non-academic. So at the first conference, I was conspicuous as being a non-academic, obviously with a panel here. Now you've mixed things up, and that's great. David, I really liked your comment about localism is an antidote to consolidation, and the notion of the low-power radio stations with the passage of the Community Radio Act. Just a few months ago by Congress, and it's being signed by President Obama. I mean, this has been a long time struggle with the NAB standing in the way, and but finally this has happened, and this might very well be, thank you very much, this might very well be an opportunity for expanding localism and the localism reach and voice in your community, and that's very exciting. Kate, with your permission and blessing, I'm going to take a little more than the 5 minutes that the panel has graciously done here, because I want to try to summarize some highlights from the conference for me that may resonate with you all and help to refresh your recollection on some key points and get our discussion afterwards going. I appreciate your consummate outsider, consummate insider. description, and I want to use one of those roles as the context for my comments, which was I was elected last year as the chairman of the Partnership for Connected Illinois, and we've got three members of our staff and consultants here, and I want them to get up so we can recognize them. Bob Flyder, if you'll get up. Bob is our new director of Broadband Impact. And was former mayor of Mount Zion and 8 years in the state legislature, worked with Illinois Power, and his job is director of Broadband Impact, which we'll come back to in my comments here. Steve Bone is a consultant, and Steve helped bring Andy and the taping and recording of the conference and putting it up on the internet. And Steve, he's our consultant to get things done right. We're very proud of our association with him. And Deb Strauss, if you'll get up. Deb is our development consultant, and she was former executive director of Lumity, who is a leader in providing internet access and training. So thank you for hanging in here, guys. I really appreciate this. Anyway, Partnership Connected Oregon, and just to give you the context, our mission is threefold. It's broadband data, broadband access, and broadband impact. Think of those three basic points. I think the subject of this conference on the research, eChicago, the research with technology and the internet, our greatest interest here is the relationship between the research and really understanding the impact of this technologies. This is where I think, both from students, I think a large part of our audience, majority of our audience over the last couple of days have been students, and then faculty and other adults. But this is a great challenge both for professionals in the information field here and you students, you guys, and I'll come to this more specifically in a moment. Anyway, when I'm talking about research and broadband impact, what I mean more particularly is the understanding and measurement of the economic and social impact, especially as we're concerned with the $350 million of investments that the federal government has recently made in the state of Illinois in through the BTOP program in Department of Commerce and the BIP program in Department of Agriculture. So it is really understanding the economic and social impact and the sustainability of these projects, because we don't want these projects to be up and running and then when the federal money stops, they all go away. No. So another dimension that I'm particularly interested in is that the focus of the Obama administration in putting out this, in investing in this, this infrastructure in particular, but other aspects as well, is that they wanted to serve unserved and underserved populations, i.e. people that were not being served by the private sector. So there is a role for government here. And the issue is, what is the role for government and how does the government work with the private sector most effectively? Because the private sector alone will not get us to universal broadband. And if universal broadband is the goal, the private sector alone simply won't do it. Okay, I'd like to make some reactions to the opening session from yesterday. Greg Wass, the Chief Information Officer of Cook County, was here and he stayed here almost all day. Did you guys notice? Mm-hmm. I thought that was fabulous. Mm-hmm. Most people come in from the government, they come in, they make their speech, they leave, that's the end of it. I mean, Greg Wass stayed here almost the whole day. And in fact, we were having a meeting with him, probably the most important conventions for me is what happens in the hallway. It's not what happens in the panels. It's what happens in the hallway. And the most important hallway, well, I mean, yeah. The most important hallway conversation we had was Greg Wass, and he wanted, and he was wonderful, but he wanted to get back and listen to what was going on here. I thought it was wonderful. That was just fabulous. So this was amazing. I think of the three points that he mentioned, the most interesting one was the South Suburban project, and if this is funded by the state of Illinois with $6 million and $10 million of local funding, which is what he reported on, this will be the Northeast Illinois Broadband Opportunities Program. Now, he mentioned in his comments that Governor State University doesn't even have a high-speed internet. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Here's one of the state universities, they don't have high-speed internet? I mean, incredible. So if through this project they can get the connection, and I don't know, David, whether your community college in South Suburban is really fully equipped with high-speed internet, whether you have what you need and want, but I mean, our anchor institutions, our education institutions, community colleges, and of course, universities have got to be plugged in, or else they can't do their job.
Absolutely.
So By the way, your challenge of having a mini meeting like this in the South Suburban, that's a very good idea. We should talk more about that. Matt Guilford came next. Matt, I'm delighted to see Matt in the back of the room. Matt, you're wonderful to come back and stick with us here on a Saturday afternoon. Thank you. I think your focus on the people-centered approach to broadband, man, this is right on. And of course, you mentioned the two broadband projects that have been funded by BTOP. The sustainable broadband experimentation and implementation, as you described it, which is terrific, and with Karen Mossberger doing the research with funding from the MacArthur Foundation over the next 3 years. Now, here is an opportunity, students who are here at UIUC, if you're interested in doing research, talk to Karen. For God's sake, get with Karen. She needs, feet on the ground. A real opportunity. Then the other one, of course, is the Public Computer Center, Citywide Impact for Computers, and Karen is also doing research on this with data on Chicago's 77 communities in 2008, 2011, and 2013. That's another very interesting research project, and we are, in fact, it's partially funded through PCI. So Matt's conclusion, I love this. Wrote it down just what you said, Matt. Chicago is trying to draw a deep understanding of the needs of people and drive change through that approach. That's wonderful. That's not typical of government, but it's wonderful. That's what you're doing, and congratulations. Okay, the next panel. I'm not going to do this for all the panels, please. So don't be worried.
We want to save some time for discussion.
Of course. The next panel was the broadband, the pipes. And I thought we're especially interested in the Northern Illinois project and the research model that they are developing. And it was wonderful that Jim was here as a researcher. Northern Illinois Project is one of the three major regional infrastructure projects funded under BTOP with their 10 counties. We had a regional conference in March in Naperville, hosted by Northern and PCI. We're going to have another conference in Carbondale on June 2nd in Southern Illinois, and a third conference in early October in Champaign-Urbana, focusing on Central Illinois. And we hope to develop in these three areas of the state, working with these projects, research efforts that are focused on trying to measure the impact of these investments on the economic and social impact they're making here. And that's easy to say, but very hard to do. And so those of you who are participating in that process are on the frontier. By the way, we are plugged in with ASR Analytics, which is doing the research nationally with $5 million from the from NTIA, and so the goals and methodologies that ASR Analytics is using, we want to apply here, and we want to inform what they are doing. So there will be an interplay between state, our regional and local efforts, and the national perspective. John Gant is a lead researcher with UC2B that Abdul, I believe, is on the board of. Abdul's been much present here, and we'll come back to him in a moment. But it was nice to hear Mike Smeltzer say that they're focusing on providing services to vulnerable populations directly and through anchor institutions. That's very unusual, because it's usually one or the other, and that makes it a very important project. Robert Woonsom of ICN, Illinois Century Network. The main challenge here is connecting the middle mile, that is particularly connecting anchor institutions, to the last mile, connecting to home users and so on. And there are some problems historically with that. but it's certainly something that needs to be addressed, and we want to help if we can help bridge that gap. Charles Wu of Convergence Technologies, I thought that video he played on get ready for a connected future, that is a terrific tool, and I'm sure it's available. So if you want to use a tool to raise consciousness about the importance of your field, hey, get ready for a connected future. Get it from Charles Wu. That was a terrific idea, resource. Bob had the idea, we got to get Charles Wu on the agenda of the next meeting of the Illinois Municipal League of Cities. Well, we're going to do that. And he's very interested, and they may need to have another vendor or two, so we're not favoring one over another, but that's okay. He will shine because of the quality of his thinking and his work, and that's just fine. Broadband the people. I'm only going to mention one here. Jim Prude. I hope that's the right pronunciation.
Jim Prude, right.
Yeah, Jim Prude. Technology organizer for Auburn Gresham, one of the five smart communities in Chicago. His description of the role of women in an essentially matriarchal society is what I was my conclusion in Auburn Gresham, population 55,000. Was fascinating, his ultimate goal of helping residents to reach their full potential and improve the human condition. Whoa, let me say it again. The ultimate goal, and I wrote it right down from this, is of helping residents to reach their full potential and improve the human condition. That's terrific. Congratulations, absolutely wonderful. I can't finish the panel or the report from the past without mentioning this music panel that we had this morning. Honest to God, I thought this music panel was really interesting. Abdul, I don't know whether, I think you're maybe the force behind it, but I found Paul Maloney's ACCU radio, which I've never heard of, being a major independent multi-radio channel company in the United States, with RAIN, radio and internet newsletter. Fascinating, absolutely great. And his four golden eras of the radio, terrific. The fourth golden era, which is the first where radio was the dominant one, the second where TV, the third FM. The fourth one with the internet, in addition to the internet, we now have low power FM and the Community Radio Act, and which we've talked about, which is great. I was very touched, moved by Ernest Dawkins, the Association of the Advancement of Creative Musicians. That total organization got 30 people in Chicago. It's got 35 to 40 in New York. Think of the struggle, but think of the idea of creative improvisation in music. I mean, it really was terrific, he is a very impressive man. I would just say, we want to get the underground above ground. That would be my advice to him, and we'll be in touch and see how we can help. Over lunch, our team met to talk about to get their reactions, and I got three final, very quick points. First. And this was Steve Bone's comment. So much research is secondary research. The advantage, the beauty, and those students that are still here is great. You're able to do on the ground research, get original information, and the original data can shape the generalizations and the agenda for the future. So that's the exciting challenge for you students here in particular, and you'll have the time, and with the guidance of teachers like Kate and Karen Mossberger and others, can really make an original contribution, because this is a great time to be in this research business, in this subject matter. It really is fabulous. So that was the first point. And especially applied to adoption research, where we just don't know much about what are the barriers and exactly, I mean, there's a lot of theory about this and the National Broadband Plan talking about cost, relevance, literacy. Hey, what are the hard specifics? Actually, Blair Levin, who was the former head of National Broadband Plan, who's become a pretty good friend, quite a good friend, said, look, the telephone's an automatic medium, but broadband is not. You have to have certain skills in order to, and self-confidence. But to really understand all this, I think especially for the students here, the research opportunities are tremendous. What a great field to be in. I wish I could change places with you. Number two, the virtual audience. Andy, we're enormously grateful. Are you still back there?
I am.
Andy Pinkone and his team, which was mobilized at the very last minute and with a little bit of financial support from PCI. I want to say, Kate, that we decided in our group meeting at lunch that we will commit, with the help of Andy, if Andy's willing, to do the virtual broadcast next year. We'll commit now to do that. And so instead of doing this at the last minute, we can really think about how to mobilize the virtual audience and how to get the interaction between them and us and build that in a more systematic way so that we can take the very good material and things that are going on here and magnify it, because the media is the magnifier. One of my generalizations in life. And finally, I'm a little embarrassed on this, but I won't be too embarrassed to do it. But Bob Fleeter, I gave our team copies of the Benton Foundation 30th anniversary report, which is only 2 weeks old, and the subtitle is Celebrating 30 Years with a Focus on the Future. And the last quote we put in here, we had boxes in the report, and by the way, it's all available on the internet, so if you want to see the copy of this on your own, just go to www.benton.org. We got there early on, so it's a real simple. If you remember Benton, you can remember how to get to us on the website, www.benton.org. Anyway, the quote, and this is from our Universal Affordable Broadband for All Americans report that we did in 2007 and was written by Jim Kohlenberger, who's just joined our board and was, before that, the chief of staff for John Holdren in the White House with 100 people reporting to him. The Office of the OSTP, Office of Science, Technology, Policy. We're thrilled to have Jim back because he was working for us between the Clinton-Gore administration and the Obama administration, and he will guide us in the future, no doubt. Anyway, this was his lead paragraph in this report, and it's short, and then I'm finished. And it says, for more than 200 years, Americans have approached the future the same way that Huck Finn looked at the bend in the river. Even though we didn't know for sure what was coming next, we always had a sense of limitless possibilities about where we were going and where it would take us. Americans whose ideas have changed the world are the ones who have been able to see around the bend, catch a glimpse of the future, capture its potential, and ensure that all Americans can participate.
This question of the rings that are coming through the I-57
road that that is going to provide broadband to places like Harlem. Could you speak to those streams and tell us which one realizes more democracy, if that's really a relevant question, in terms of broadband versus FM radio, whatever?
Which stream is more democratic? I think the broadband gives us the greatest potential for impacting democracy. That is to say that involving people, touching people, enabling us to use the technology to have the impacts upon our community at one level. At another level, educating the community so that the community can have an impact upon public policy. And I think it's important that that we have as a goal the educating of the community so that the community is able to understand the difference between public policy and personality. We have a man who looks like so many of us in the room. He has a lovely family, a lovely wife, and people get carried off on that. When in reality, if we did the analysis of the policies that he has been pushing over the last 2 years, it's essentially more of the same. So it's very important that people are able to understand, A, the importance of public policy because it transcends generations. And for example, we're seeing collective bargaining under attack, which has been a staple in this country since the Depression years, right? That's policy. And so I think it's important that we use broadband and that everything at our disposal to educate the community to sort out charismatic personalities from public policy. So I would vote for broadband in terms of answering your question. But this impetus for community education is very important and critical.
Again, I'd like to say thank you for the panel and also thank you for everyone who's here. I'm going to make a statement and sort of ask a question about the money. And I'm going to start by giving an example of what we've done in Champaign Urbana. We got $30 million to build an infrastructure primarily underground, build out rings that will eventually serve the entire two-city area. There are a lot of different actors, stakeholders, that have contributed money, mainly the large institutions, the library, the two cities, and those people who want, those institutions that want dedicated strands. They want their own fiber. So hospitals, for example, and people who, institutions that have high security concerns. So we're listening to all this, and we did something very unusual in Champaign-Urbana, is when we defined anchor institutions, we went beyond what everybody else in the country did. Everybody else in the country did fire police, schools, libraries, hospitals, the junior colleges, and so on. And what we did was expanded that. In other words, we did every homeless shelter, every women's shelter, neighborhood centers, and so on, because they are, in fact, anchor institutions in our neighborhoods, in our communities. Now, the digital divide money has been coming from the state. Connie Howard, who's a representative from Chicago, has been chair of that committee. We also know the state is not exactly rolling in dough. So their ability to continue to fund things, I mean, they owe the University of Illinois $1 billion, that state. And we're a state institution. So that ought to tell you something right there. Now, what we've done is we passed a resolution in UCB that states that at least 5% of the revenue that flows through UCB under whatever conditions. In other words, it's still possible that they may outsource the actual operations of the UC2B cyber infrastructure funded by public money. Now, we've had this experience. Railroads. The federal government gave away millions of acres to create railroads, which were essential for an integrated national economy. Then they gave it to the privates. So if we want to ride on the railroads, you want to send some material on the railroads, you got to pay. And railroads are a huge lobby and a huge interest. Now the question is, are we in fact using this money to simply fund capitalist corporations who can charge us money under their conditions? Now they're the ones who have kept us from having high-speed internet. They're the ones that redlined every time they rolled out an ICT. The only way they got public money in Ohio to overcome the digital divide is the suit against AT&T because they redlined Ohio and they were forced in court to put money in an account, and that's the way in which public labs were established in Ohio. We had to take these corporations to court and force them to help us overcome the digital divide. Now I'm concerned about what's going to happen with BTOP in the whole United States. So we passed a resolution in Champaign-Urbana that requires at least 5% of the resources to be set aside in what we're calling a community benefit fund, so that we will, in fact, out of our local economy, generate resources that can then be applied into the public sector to create and build labs in every church, in every community center, and so on. Because we're concerned not just about the individual adoption, we're concerned about the transformation of the social infrastructure of the communities so that our communities can be on par with the corporations and the military and the government, which are the early adopter institutions of this technology. So I'm just wondering, from the standpoint of the panel or anybody else here, first, does anybody know of any other project that is putting money aside based on BTOP investment to be able to continue to fund digital divide efforts in lower income communities? Because it seems to me, if we miss this and it ends up that all the bankers and the capitalists have smiles on their faces because we help them create new markets for themselves, then we haven't been paying attention in East Chicago 2011.
Well, Abdul, I know this is one of your favorite topics and something you've given a lot of thought to. There are people much smarter and experienced in this than I, but I've heard enough to be able to sort of begin to address your concerns. The structure of our communication system in the country is to a very large extent a duopoly now. It's either the cable companies, and especially the big cable companies, Comcast, which is now getting a lot bigger through its recent merger, which most people in the public interest community, the Comcast-NBC merger, opposed, and the telephone companies, AT&T, a T-Mobile merger, which is a $45 billion merger. Actually, the Benton Foundation, it was the first time we've done this, came out just flat opposed to it, because it is a vertical merger, and it doesn't. If you think about the goals of the FCC, there are three goals. They're to promote, legislatively, to promote competition, to promote localism, and to promote diversity. Those are the three overarching goals of the FCC. Now, just tell me, how does the AT&T T-Mobile merger support competition, or localism, or diversity? It obviously doesn't, and it narrows the choices from four providers to three providers, and it's just getting more closer to an oligopoly, and that is the system that we have. And I'm now not, this is not rhetoric, I'm just being very objective. These are the facts. This is not, again, not passing judgment, it's the facts. Now, what do we do about that? Well, I'll tell you what PCI is doing. I think it's highly unlikely that we're going to be working with AT&T or Verizon or Comcast or the other major providers, because one of the criteria for accepting federal money under the BTOP and BIP is net neutrality. And these big companies are just not, they're not up for net neutrality, because net neutrality is the principle is open access, open internet, equal and open access. And the big companies, the tendency is to monopolize, the tendency is for control. And that's the business system we're in. We want to focus, actually, Robin Woodson said it really well. It was wonderful. He said, focus on companies that are in the community and want to serve the community. I love it. Those independent small telcos and smaller companies that are in the community and want to serve, we have a wonderful example. Two wonderful examples. I think Charles Wu from Convergence Technologies Inc. is a terrific example of a company that is in the community and wants to serve the community. Wonderful. Clearwave in Southern Illinois is a company, and Charles got the money from BIP. Clearwave got about $40 million from BTOP. And they are, if you listen to those guys, man, they are dedicated. I've said to our team here, I want to work with companies that want to do good and do well at the same time. And there's nothing wrong with making money if you are not interested in exploitation, but there's a fair and reasonable balance between doing good and doing well. And I think that there are lots of companies. So I'm not anti-private sector. I came out of my own video publishing distribution business. I've been in the private sector all my life. But we took on good, I mean, the motto in our companies was good films that sell. We wouldn't take on junk. I don't care if it's sold or not. We had to have some standards. So it's good films that sell. That was our motto in terms of acquisition and distribution of video. So we were proud of doing good, and we had a great reputation. A lot of people came to us as a result. I mean, it was a win-win situation. So I am for the private sector in that kind of a scenario. Now, that is obviously doesn't describe the private sector across the board. We all understand that. But life's complicated here. And Abdul's right to be exercised about the problems. And insofar as the BIP and BTOP projects can set aside a community benefit fund, that is wonderful. That is fabulous. But they're already in the community benefit business in general anyway. So that's just an extra overlay, your community benefit fund. Anyway, that's my quick response, my long response to that.
Other comments from the rest of you? And so there's precedence here. And that's why I think that we can learn, I think, from community access. But also, we need to understand how those spaces, again, can continue into the digital age, and why I believe we drastically need new policies to support these community media organizations that increasingly look like the types of projects that we're talking about here. So I offer that again, some precedence, but what can we learn from that 30 years of experience, 40 years of experience, that might be helpful in this vision?
I'd have to add a couple of really key points to Colin's kind comments. First, it's wonderful that Colin, as a graduate student at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, is focusing on this. Here is a wonderful illustration of the community media tradition, potential contribution for access television and access media into the future, community media centers, the transition from cable access to a community media center. That is one of the answers, obviously, and there are other points. But it's great, Colin, that you're focusing on this, that you're willing to devote your part of your career now that you're building on this subject matter, and congratulations. It's wonderful. Two other quick points. One of the underlying causes of the erosion community access television is that the cable companies and telephone companies, cable companies in particular, by the way, parenthetically, broadband, that is a fiber broadband, is 70% controlled by the cable companies. So let's just bear this in mind, it's 70% of the users nationally. It's the cable companies that control. That's the problem with Comcast that we were talking about earlier, just parenthetically. But their goal was to have franchising rules at the state level as opposed to the local community level. And as they moved it up to the state level, they can get rid of those obligations, those public interest obligations that were negotiated as part of the community by community deals. And that's the underlying force behind the phenomena that you're studying right now. So that's a positive force is the Community Radio Act, which will give us more diversity in radio, community radio. So we don't want to think just internet. Colin, it's wonderful that you're focusing on this great question and our great comment, but you're going to have to answer your own question. That's where we are. P.S., one final point. Remember, PEG is public education, government. Another thing that the same guy that did the research for us on the public access has discovered, because he's looking at the G, the government access, 85% of the cities with 100,000 population or more have got a G channel. Totally unknown. Who knows that? Most people don't. But that is, and he fed that information into the future media proceeding at the FCC, which is trying to give FCC some guidelines on to think about the old media, future media, old media, as opposed to the new media, the internet. But it's, and that's one of the problems of the FCC. It's too siloed, too much silos, instead of thinking cross-collaterally. Details.
I'd like to invite Andy to make his comment or question, and anyone else got one that they want to get in position of the mic, or else I've got something.
This comment is not a comment, it's a fact, and it follows what Abdul brought up, because what you need to know is the trend has already started in Wisconsin. Some of you that are knowledgeable may know, over $20 million of federal stimulus money went in for broadband in Wisconsin. And because of the AT&T hold of the network there, the requirements federally require a certain amount of disclosures that they refused. And therefore, Wisconsin, separate from what the current administration has been giving back in federal funding, like in rail transport, private rail, this had nothing to do with that. They couldn't meet the obligations under the federal grant because AT&T wouldn't cooperate. And therefore, they had to give back over $20 million. And that money went to all the libraries. Fiber to every library in Wisconsin is dead on arrival. So it's already happened. Now, the fortunate thing about Illinois is we have the Illinois Century Network, which Connie Howard is responsible. She considers herself to be the mother of the largest private education and data and telecom network of its kind in the world. But a few years ago, before the stimulus money, Robin and I used to talk that the only way we were going to get anyone's attention is for the whole network to go down because there was no funding to support the operation and upgrades. We have this one window of opportunity, and it's here now. And if we don't learn from history, we are condemned to repeat it, and it's not pretty.
Can I just a very small point? You've got to build it. At UCTV, you've got a chance of building it because that's one of the few models where they're dealing with individuals, homes, and when you go out to the homes, it's 5,000 homes. You're gonna be collecting universal data of all the homes you're trying to serve. So you've got to build this. And UCTV is a great place to be to build that model with full understanding and having full data. So don't look to others. Look to your own community and get active with UCDB. I'm sure that the folks that are here that, well, if you're there, you must know the people to talk to about it. Well, talk to Abdul. that passion that you've just shown, get with that model and apply your research skills. You wouldn't be here if you weren't focused on information, data, research as a student. And focus it on your own community. Help build that model. That's my admonition to you.
From my vantage point or perspective, there's a trend in the society that shows that the public comments are quickly being turned over to the private sector. And I think the challenge for us with regards to local media and broadband is to use the state-of-the-art technologies that you all as students and community practitioners are using to rebuild and to ensure that these technologies make space for the public comments. Otherwise, what we know as democracy becomes something else. If the people can't have access to the state-of-the-art technologies, if the people can't use these technologies to educate themselves, to raise their capacity and become a service to humanity, then what we're talking about is something other than democracy. And I think this is something that we have to keep our mind's eye on for the future and literally build a better democratic and technological future for our communities and our society and for the world.
Thank you.
I would say that as a citizen and as an educator, that this has been a lesson for me in terms of being here, being part of some of the conversations that I've had today and that I've learned from. And I would say that I would like for all of us to be committed to wherever our location is, that we take some of this back with us and continue to do some of the work of translating technology into community practice. Remember, I talked about advocacy and access, and I still think those are very key to the ideas that we've been kind of advocating here today in terms of getting the word out and continuing to look for points of access and movement toward the fuller democracy that David was just referring to as well.
I think that I'd want to leave the conference with perhaps a look at the other side of the coin to what Andre referred to. I do think that it's a very difficult time, but I also believe that the different communities in the city, and citizens and non-citizens for that matter, have an obligation, I believe, to contribute to this project, which is using technology, but it's not about technology. It's what Mr. Benton talked about, the betterment of human being, and how do we contribute in a profound way. And I believe different communities are doing that in different ways, but I don't believe that there is that that unique model, and I don't know that it's necessary as a unique model. I do believe our city and our this country is so rich in experience from the grassroots level that there's an obligation to contribute to building a model. And some communities, for different reasons, have a better grasp of how to use technology, but to what end? Remember, the other side of technology is about what the people who I'm involved in, what we're involved in, are using it for. So in some ways, it's a race. On the other hand, it's also true that it, to echo what Patricia said, it behooves us to go back to our communities. And how do we either activate or anchor ourselves in not only works of technology, which in many cases are extremely isolated, but how do we become part of that citizen and non-citizens movement for the betterment of humanity? Thank you.
Kate, let me have the last word, if I may, on this. I'm going to aim my advice very specifically at your question of what do you do next year, 2012? What do you focus on next year? And I have three words. And I'll elaborate just a little. Follow the money. Follow the money. Now, what I'm saying is that the BTOP and BIP investments of $7 billion across the country is without precedent. I mean, investing in publicly funded projects, and we've got $350 million of this in Illinois. That's 5% of the national total. There ought to be research. There ought to be a research component for every one of these projects. Every one. And what should the fundamental question of that research component be? What difference does this money make? You know, what is the economic and social impact of this investment? And that's the key question here. And is it sustainable? Those are the fundamental questions here. And that's what I suggest that you might want to focus on next year when we have a president of the White House who still deeply believes in technology. I mean, wherever you are in Obama, and that's, they're going to lobby lots of different points of view, he is a deep believer in technology, in the power of technology. His predecessor, the policy was no policy. Over to the private sector. That was it. Just think about that. We now have a national broadband plan. It was written into the ARRA by none other than Ed Markey from Massachusetts. That's why we have the national broadband plan. And it was so it was passed by Congress and with great encouragement from the White House, signed by the president. You've got a president that believes in technology and the power of technology and the difference it makes in our lives. And technology touches everything. I don't care what your passion is, technology is a part of it. It's got to be a part of it to be effective. It has to. So follow the money. Focus on the accountability of that money, those investments, and what difference are they making and how can we make it better.
To meet you, to hear your words.
Let me have your card, because as we grant writing, planning, market development. Well, I hope you're plugged into the South Suburban with your especially former mayor of Harvard for 12 years, very impressive. I hope you're plugged into the mayor's, apparently the guy that runs the cooperative, the regional cooperation of mayors.
Yeah, South Suburban mayors and managers.
That's right, South Suburban. He has a very good reputation. Apparently, they've been checking, and